of the general pediatricians at Rush, and I have the pleasure of working with Monique and Heidi, as well as Mary Mullen, who's one of our pediatric dietitians. We have no disclosures. There we go. And I'm sure you're all very well aware that the U.S. is certainly not alone in this growing epidemic. And in 2014, Ogden's group, they published some data showing that over one-third of all U.S. children and adolescents are either overweight or obese in 2011 to 2012. And there are certainly some racial disparities. About 30% of all non-Hispanic white children and adolescents were overweight or obese. That was compared to about 39% of all non-Hispanic black children and adolescents, and 46% of Hispanic children, and 38% of Hispanic adolescents. So those numbers are amazingly huge. And compared to the data from 2009 to 2010, those numbers had all increased. So in 2007, an expert committee was formed between actually 15 different professional organizations. They included the AAP and the NAP, and they revised the guidelines from 1998. These included the 20 standards for identification, prevention, and management that were to be used for all healthcare maintenance visits for pediatric patients. So on the top are the 10 standard recommendations that are to be used for all the well child visits for all pediatric patients. This was considered the prevention stage, and then the bottom was the prevention plus stage. This included 10 additional standards that were being used for all patients who are overweight and obese. These standards included documentation for comorbidities that were related to obesity, as well as how well we documented the diagnosis, workup, and follow-up. So how well do providers document obesity? Apparently very poorly. In 2011, Cool's group reviewed the provider's documentation for obesity based on ICD-9 codes, and they found that providers documented obesity at a rate of only 1.5%, which was significantly lower than the national rate of childhood obesity, which is about 17%. So my hope is that providers are much better at actually following the recommendations compared to how well they document their work in the EMRs. So how do we improve this practice? As you might imagine, providers are sometimes pretty resistant to changes because this can interrupt the workflow, especially when the times for visits are getting shorter and shorter. So some things that we looked into, some possible strategies for improving not only the documentation but also practice, were to actually embed EMR prompts into our templates, and then utilizing motivational interviewing as well as mobile phone text reminders for parents and patients that would help them remind them of, like, what goals have you set and when is your next appointment. And currently there's a decent amount of data that looks into the adherence of standards for identification and management, but there really are only a few studies looking into how well providers follow guidelines for prevention, especially in healthy weight pediatric patients. So the purpose of our QI project, it was to look at primary care or PCP adherence to the 20 standard recommendations set by the expert committee, to compare adherence based on the patient's weight category, age, race, and gender, and then finally to identify areas for improvement and to make recommendations to providers.
Thank you. As Karen pointed out, pediatric primary care providers, PhD and DNP, prepared nurses came together to look at opportunities to improve practice. We've heard throughout the conference that obesity treatment and prevention can be addressed by various systematic approaches. We chose to conduct a chart audit to address provider and practice approaches to addressing obesity. The study design was a retrospective chart audit with stratified random sampling at a large pediatric primary care practice in Chicago, Illinois. 71% of the patients were publicly insured or uninsured, and 85% of the patients African American or Hispanic. African American, Hispanic, and white children and adolescents aged 6 to 19 were included as our inclusion criteria, and you also had to come in for a well child visits between the months of June through October of 2013, which you can imagine is a higher period for back to school physicals, so we had a good group to select from. Normal weight, overweight, and obese patients were included in the project. Underweight were excluded because there are a different set of criteria at managing the underweight patient. Okay, and working with the IT department, we were able to assess that there were 3,052 child visits for 6 to 19-year-olds from June to October of 2013. Of these visits, 41% were overweight or obese, which trends a little higher than the national average. A little more children were under the age of 12, were seen under the age of 12 than from 12 to 19-year-olds. And 62% of the patients seen were African American during that time. Slightly more male than female patients were seen during that time. We worked with a statistician, and the final study sample included 175 children and adolescents from that sample of 3,052. Because it was a stratified sample, we had equal representation of weight, status, age, ethnicity, and gender. So about 5 patients from each of the categories were included. So I'll just break down how the categories were. So 5 normal weight, under 12-year-old Hispanic males were included. 5 underweight, under 12-year-old Hispanic females. 5 overweight, under 12-year-old Hispanic males. And we kept going through the list like that. We selected randomly from each of the categories accordingly. 2 authors conducted the chart audit. We used an audit instrument to assess documentation of the AAP and the NAPNAP standards for overweight and obesity in children. Inter-rater reliability was established. The frequencies of provider documentation of the assessment criteria suggested by the AAP and NAPNAP recommendations was identified as either present or absent. So present was greater than a frequency of greater than or equal to 80% of the charts included had that assessment finding, one of the 20 assessment findings in the chart. And absent would be less than or equal to 40% of the charts included in the audit didn't have that finding. Chi-square analyses were performed to examine if there was a relationship between patient weight status classification, so normal weight, overweight, or obese, their age, under 12, over 12, their race, and their gender, and provider's documentation of adherence to the guidelines was then determined. So frequency of documentation of adherence is shown in this table and the next table. So the red here will indicate that the documentation suggests that they're doing a good job in adhering to the guidelines. And the blue indicates that there are opportunities for improvement, and under 40% of the charts will be in the would have that particular item that was assessed. This slide focuses on prevention. Remember, Karen said that we looked at prevention and prevention plus, which is akin to treatment or management. This slide presents prevention. Here we can see in the blue that of the 175 charts that were included, documentation shows that there are opportunities to improve assessment of pediatric patient sleep problem, parental obesity, and water intake. So as the first slide showed prevention, this slide shows, this slide only includes the 116 overweight and obese children. So remember that prevention plus are the recommendations for them. So here we see that there are opportunities to increase adding correct weight classification. So whether or not you are overweight and obese as an actual diagnosis in the diagnosis list. There may be reimbursement implications for adding this. Also, documentation shows assessment of endocrine disorders such as diabetes or genetic problem. And also, if there are follow-up appointment that was attended within the 6 months. Now, that is 92 because we only assess those that actually received a follow-up appointment. So So the next set of slides will be the results that were statistically significant based on the chi-square analyses. Here we wanted to see if assessment was more likely to be different based on the following four categories. These are the same weight status, age, race, and gender. For each of these four categories, we again looked at prevention, then at prevention plus. So for weight status, providers were more likely to have documentation of assessment of physical activity and sugar beverage consumption in overweight and obese patients than in normal weight patients. They were more likely to have documentation of assessment of an endocrine problem and providing a follow-up appointment to obese patients rather than in overweight patients. They were more likely to assess physical activity and sugared beverage consumption in older children and adolescents than in younger children, but more likely to assess for a sleep problem in younger children than in older children and adolescents. And there's a growing body of research around the link between sleep and weight status. They were more likely to have documentation of assessment of an endocrine disorder in older children and adolescents than in younger children. Black and Hispanic patients were more likely to have documentation of receiving a follow-up appointment, yet black patients were least likely to attend the follow-up appointment. Girls were more likely to have documentation of an endocrine assessment as completed than boys, and this was the only finding by gender. After completing the chart audit, the two investigators reviewed the results with the primary care provider team, who discussed it then with their teams at the institution. At this clinic, there was a recent obesity treatment initiative, and our overall findings support that the initiative was successful following for obesity treatment, with some opportunities for improvement in areas of prevention. Following conversations about the feasibility of implementing change, there were five findings that were identified as priority and realistic areas for change. Those included including the correct weight diet classification as measured by BMI of overweight or obese in the diagnosis list, assessing parental history of obesity, assessing the sleep and endocrine assessment, as well as encouraging attendance of patients at a follow-up visit. The preferred method of increasing this was the electronic medical record prompts. So most published chart audits in this area assess treatment rather than prevention. Yet prevention should be an important component of addressing rates of overweight and obesity. While we know that obesity is at a problem for all regardless of age or race, most of our findings were consistent with the current literature in that there were opportunities to improve documentation of assessment and management of normal weight and overweight children and adolescents, younger children, and white children and adolescents in certain areas. Gender did not seem as much of a significant influence. There are certainly numerous limitations to the implementation of AAP and NAPNAP guidelines. Some of them include the lack of time for parental communication and involvement during a visit, the cost of training primary care providers, limited resources, and the processes within the healthcare system to make change possible. There are also limitations to this project. The chart audit relied on electronic medical records, which Karen pointed out, can under or over report the actual interaction that providers have with the children, adolescents, and the parents during the visit. There's also a lack of generalizability to other pediatric primary care practices. There's a need for better adherence to AAP and NAPNAP guidelines, recommendations for the prevention and management and identification of childhood obesity. Based on evidence from chart audits, public health nurses can advocate for system change to ensure that providers' documentation reflects best practices for improving, identifying, preventing, managing, and obesity in pediatric populations. Just want to acknowledge our funding source. That's it. Thank you.